Chariot Solutions TechCast for Thursday, August 28, 2008. Our special guest today is James Ward, Flex Evangelist from Adobe Systems. Today we talk about the Flex SDK, open source licensing, Flex Builder, the Air Runtime, and what's coming up in Flex 4.0. James is a frequent contributor to blogs, podcasts, and conferences. You can hear him most recently on The Flex Show, episode 50. He also has spoken at Chariot's Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference in 2008, and will be speaking there again in 2009. I'm joined in the studio by Matt Hughes, a Chariot consultant and Flex developer, who's my co-host for the day. How you doing, James?
Good. How are you, Ken?
Great. I have with me in the studio here Matt Hughes. He's a consultant for Chariot Solutions, and he's doing a lot of work with Flex right now.
How you doing?
Did you work with Flex before you joined up with Adobe, or how'd you get involved with it?
Yeah, definitely. So I was working at a company called Pillar Data Systems, and this was about 4 years ago. I started building a customer service portal all in Flex. It was started in Flex 1.0 and then Flex 1.5, and just fell in love with Flex. And so Macromedia hired me on as an evangelist for Flex, and been doing that since then, and about 3 years now. And so Macromedia was, of course, acquired by Adobe. So now met Adobe talking about Flex.
Excellent. So now you do a lot of blogging, a lot of writing, right, on your jamesward.com website?
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And how about like any kind of internal documentation or you know, sample code or things that you're sharing with developers?
Yeah, so I stuff that I've kind of publish, there's stuff on my blog that I try to make more educational information. I also write articles for InfoQ, some of the other Java-related websites out there. And then Bruce Eckel and I have been working on a book called First Steps in Flex. So that'll hopefully be coming out in the next couple months. So there are quite a few little kind of side activities for creating educational resources out there for people.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I guess why don't we dive in, just talking a little bit about our audience to give you an idea who's listening to this. We're mostly Java developers, enterprise Java applications, you know, things like Tomcat and web applications. So, from my perspective, Java developers usually don't get much involved in graphical applications just because we've been so brutalized by things like Swing.
Yeah.
You know? So yep. I guess my question is, why would Java developers really want to care about something like Flex?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something I talk to a lot of Java developers about. I've been doing Java for about 10 years or so, and did a lot of web application programming and JSPs and struts and wrote lots of HTML and JavaScript. And when I came across Flex, I was definitely kind of suspicious about this thing that uses Flash, and you know, just my views of Flash were not very nice. And so when I started playing with Flex, I was like, wow, you know, this really takes a lot of the hassle that I'm having to deal with, you know, building these applications, and makes it a lot easier. One of the things that right away I was just blown away by was that I could create a tab navigator control with one line of code, and then, you know, I showed my boss, I was all excited, hey, look at this cool tab navigator, and she's like, well, that's cool, but I don't really like tabs. Could we do it as an accordion and change that one line of code for another line of code? And all of a sudden I've turned that thing into an accordion instead of a tab navigator. And, you know, if I was to do that in struts and SPs and HTML, that would take me weeks of work to do that sort of thing. So so that was why I originally really became fond of Flex and just enjoyed working with it, was how quickly I could build user interfaces and not having to test those across all the various browsers and operating systems out there. Definitely was a huge plus as well.
Absolutely.
So, Yeah, and the great thing for Java developers is that you don't have to give up Java on the back end. With Flex, it connects to any back end technology, and so you can easily connect Flex up to your Java back end and still reuse a lot of what you've done in Java and just create a new user interface on top of that.
Good. Now, also, from what I understand, Flex is actually written in Java?
The Flex SDK, the thing that actually compiles the Flex source code that developers write into the bytecode that runs inside of Flash Player, that SDK is actually written in Java. So it's open source. It's on opensource.adobe.com, and it's definitely all written in Java. The great thing about that is that developers already have Java or can easily get Java, and so for them it's a great platform that makes it cross-platform and makes it easy for them to just be able to use Flex without much hassle. There's not, you know, any native code in there, so it works on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and that makes me happy because I'm a Linux user most of the time. So
do you want to talk about like what parts of the Flex platform are open source right now?
Sure. Yeah. So with Flex, there are really three or four major parts. First two are the runtimes. So what you actually run the applications in on the client side. The first and primary one is Flash Player. That's the browser plugin that executes Flex applications. And there are open source pieces of that which we can talk about later. The second runtime is Adobe Air. And that's for running Flex applications as desktop applications. That also contains a number of open source pieces. So those are the client runtimes. Then from the development tooling side, we have the Flex SDK, which is the primary tooling. It contains everything that a developer needs to build Flex applications. It has compiler, debugger, all the Flex components like combo boxes and accordions and tab navigators and data grids. So all those are in the Flex SDK, and that is open source with the Mozilla public license available on opensource.adobe.com. So there's a public SVN, there's a public bug database at bugs.adobe.com, and the governance model for it right now isn't as formalized as you would see with an Apache project, but so there's no voting procedures and those sorts of things, but we do give commit access to outside developers, kind of once they earn our trust. So that's where the Flex SDK is. Then the Eclipse-based tooling, professional tooling, is something that is commercial. It's built on Eclipse, which is open source. You can either install it as a plugin or as a standalone, which is just Eclipse plus the plugin. So that is not open source. There is some code that we have to publish that's derived from Eclipse code, but for the most part, that's a commercial professional product. It is optional. So, you know, for me, I use CI quite a bit to build my Flex applications, and that doesn't require the Flex Builder tooling.
Right. And then the player specification, or the Swift specification, which is, you know, the bytecode for the runtime, there is an open specification for that, right? Can you talk a little bit about that and the open screen initiative and what that might mean in the future for the player?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned a little bit, the Flex SDK takes code that a developer writes and it compiles it down into the bytecode, and that bytecode format is called Swift, and the Swift file, which is what everyone's pretty familiar with from running Flash in their browsers, that Swift file is is publicly documented by Adobe. There used to be a restriction on this. When you downloaded the specification, you would have to agree to not implementing your own Flash player based on the specification. We did that. We really had good intentions because we didn't want to fragment the Flash player runtime. But now that Flash player is moving into mobile spaces with the Open Screen project, we really wanted to allow anyone to take that Swift specification and build their own Flash players, especially for mobile devices. So we recently removed that license restriction from the specification so that anyone can now download, freely use that specification to build whatever they want, whether something that creates Swift files or whether something that actually executes Swift files. So the Open Screen project was the announcement that we made where we said we're working with a number of vendors across the industry to get Flash and Air onto mobile devices. And in order to do that, we've made some changes to the Swift specification as well as some other changes to make this possible.
That's great. And what has the response been in the community? I mean, I know there are some open source Flash players in Linux, but have they kind of taken up this new specification and tried to improve their existing player? Is Adobe interested in other players existing at this point for the desktop, or is it just this mobile space that Adobe is interested in?
We primarily did it for the mobile space. If someone does want to take the specification and build a desktop or browser plugin, they could do that based on the specification. The open source Gnash project, which is an open source Flash player, the last time I talked to them, we're still not using the specification to build out their Flash player. They were still reverse engineering the Swift files. So I'm not sure why exactly they aren't using the specification, if they're still worried about some kind of legal ramifications or not. But they certainly could be if they wanted to.
Right. And then how has open sourcing the SDK, you know, has that made that easier or harder for you to sell solutions? Has there been new communities that kind of have come up, you know, into the Flash Flex world?
Yeah, definitely. The open source in the Flex SDK, which we announced over a year ago, but just formally finished when we released Flex 3 back in February, that's had a tremendous impact on allowing Flex to reach new audiences, especially people in the Java community who really are building, you know, mission critical applications that need to work 10, 20 years from now. And in order to be comfortable taking the risk of using someone else's technology, open source really helps them to have more comfort that, you know, if Adobe site decides to go another direction that they don't like, or Adobe gets acquired by somebody who has other intentions, then they can take that open source and continue to maintain their application. So the open source has definitely had a huge impact, especially in areas like government and enterprises that really want to build on kind of some open foundations. So it's had a really significant impact for sure on Flex adoption and getting it out there to new broader audiences.
Cool, that's great. So now talking about, you know, using Flex from a Java developer's perspective or any application server developer's perspective, you know, the front end, certainly when you're looking at the SDK and you're playing around, it's very easy to make a tab list or a view or whatever you want to do graphically. From back ends, it seems like you have a lot of options. So, for example, anything from, you know, consuming web services to, you know, this BlazeDS remoting and such. What would drive you going any particular direction there as a Java developer?
Yeah, so as a Java developer, you have lots of options for how you connect your Flex UI back to your backend. If you're connecting to a Java backend, then the primary options that you have available to you are any form of serialized data over HTTP. So this could be anything from RESTful web services, JSON, SOAP web services, Hessian, any kind of protocol you can think of. We also have a binary object protocol for moving objects across the wire in a more optimized format called AMF. And the AMF protocol is a published standard and is implemented in numerous open source projects. We have an open source project called BlazeDS, which is our implementation of AMF. It's open source. Just allows you really to make method calls on your backend objects or call services directly through over HTTP, because this is the UI is running, the Flex UI is running on the client. So talking back to your backend, you have to have something in the middle. We typically use HTTP for that. With BlazeDS, you can connect from client to server with either just POJOs on the server, Spring services, EJB session beans, so really anything that you have back there, Hibernate. So that's the basic method of communicating between the Flex UI and the server is the HTTP-based mechanism. We also have the ability to do publish and subscribe messaging, where you send messages back and forth between client and server. You can push both ways, and you can also connect that message service to a JMS system so that you can push messages back in a JMS and push messages from JMS out to the client. So the messaging system, again, can use HTTP and AMF as the transport, but you can also use binary protocols that may be more efficient. So those are the two primary ways. Also, in a commercial product we have called Lifecycle Data Services, you can do kind of like Hibernate for your rich internet application. So you can do full data synchronization back between client and server, not between server and database. That's addressed by Hibernate, but Lifecycle Data Services, the data management service, addresses the synchronization between the Flex client and the server. So those are the primary ways to connect your Java backend to your Flex front end. But your backend doesn't have to be Java. It can be anything that can spit out XML, web services, AMF, whatever. There's AMF implementations for really every major backend technology now. So, yeah.
It sounds like you can get started with just, you know, exposing a few web services without having to rewrite your whole back end.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you're using struts, there's a open source project called, I think, FX Struts, that actually allows you to take your existing struts application and just expose that to the front end Flex application. So that's a really easy way to get started if you're already using struts. If you're using something else on the back end, just spit out XML instead of HTML, and you can easily consume that from your Flex UI.
Yeah, I think it was Bruce Eccles on the show you were just on.
Flex Show.
Yes, the Flex Show. How about that, right? But you were on that with Bruce Eccles, and he said he did a lot of work with Python and Flex.
Yeah, he does. He's a big Python fan, and he's been doing quite a bit with both AMF and Python, as well as some XML and Python, and communicating between Flex, the Flex UI, and Python on the server. I don't know if he's played with Jython to see if he can do the same sorts of things with Jython running in the JVM, but it certainly it would be possible.
So just to be clear, which parts of the protocol go over HTTP? Does AMF go over HTTP?
Yeah, AMF is just a binary encoding that goes. It could really theoretically go over any right. network transport, but HTTP is the way we use it. People have also done AMF over sockets, but primarily because of firewalls and things between a Flex UI and the server, you usually want to keep it to HTTP for most communication, and so the AMF does just go in HTTP messages.
But does that include the push services that you were talking about? I mean, does that, you know, kind of use Comet technology to, you know, hold an HTTP socket open, or does that use real sockets?
Yeah, there's actually a few different ways that you can configure it. You can set up you could set up a binary socket that's non-HTTP based that can nail open the connection and be Java NIO on the back end. You can set up a polling channel. You can set up an HTTP streaming channel. With the polling channel, you can configure how long does the server hold the connection open for? How long does the client wait to do another pull? And so that gets into the comment style communication. But some of those methods do have some scalability problems because right. They're not NIO based. If you're using the default Tomcat or just default web server HTTP connections, our commercial product Lifecycle Data Services, we've added an NIO backed HTTP channel, so you can do HTTP streaming and polling without the connection overhead, or with being able to deal with the connection overhead of those channels. So, and then there's I think some open source projects that are doing similar things as well for doing like Tomcat 6 based NIO connections and that sort of thing. So it really scales out.
Cool. Now, speaking of scaling, you do have a whole place in your site where you use this kind of census application where you're benchmarking Flex against other rich internet application or at least Ajax platforms. So what have you learned by writing that besides that, you know, Flex and AMF is nice and fast?
Yeah, that's jamesward.com/census is my census application that I built to compare different methods of communication between client and server using Ajax, Laszlo, Flex, and lots of different methods of communicating for each of those technologies. So I definitely learned a lot about, you know, how does my serialization technology, whether it's XML, JSON, web server, SOAP web services, AMF. How does that affect what my server processing time is? So I have an option on there where you can specify whether or not you want to gzip the data for large data sets. If they're text-based, then it's usually pretty important to gzip them before they go across the wire. And so you can see what gzip does to your server processing time. In some cases, significant processing time to the server because gzip does take time to do. And then how long does the data take to cross the wire? You know, that's just depending on the size of the data. And again, gzip has an impact there, whether or not you're gzipping the data. And then also the format it makes a big difference as well, because AMF, being a binary protocol, can be much more optimized than the text-based protocols. So AMF does this cool thing where if it sees repeated values in the stream, it doesn't put them in again. It just puts references to the first time it saw it. So just out of the box, AMF can give you a pretty significant advantage over the text-based protocols in the actual size of your packets across the wire. Then Sense also measures how much time does it take to uncompress and to parse the data that when it gets to the client side. And again, that there's huge differences there between the technologies. Even JSON, which really just has to be evaled in the browser, does still take time for the browser to eval large blocks of JSON. So there's definitely differences there. And then render time, once I get this data actually into objects on the client side, how long does it take to render? And Flex has some pretty significant advantages with the JIT compiler and that sort of thing. So lots of things to learn on that one. Also, client-side sorting and filters is something that that can happen really quickly in a JITted environment. In an interpreted environment, doesn't happen quite as fast. So lots of different factors, lots of different interesting things to learn. For me, it was eye-opening. It was also eye-opening just to see just how hard dealing with cross-browser compatibility issues are. Currently, Census is broken in Firefox 3 because of some iframe changes that they made, and so I'm working on fixing that. But most of the time in Flex applications, you don't have to deal with that. Census is a Flex application, but also it uses an iframe and some other tricky JavaScript techniques to run all the tests, and so those have some problems working across browsers. So that was fun for me to run back into the cross browser compatibility issues that I used to have to deal with.
Right. So speaking of Firefox 3, I mean, Firefox 3 has gotten, you know, much faster than Firefox 2 with JavaScript performance, and all the browsers are getting better. And with Firefox 3.1, apparently they're, you know, they're implementing a just-in-time compiler, or I guess a hotspot compiler. And apparently the JavaScript performance is, you know, 10 times or something ridiculous better than even Firefox 3. Do you see this as kind of, you know, eroding at least that one performance benefit of Flex? Or do you see the browsers kind of getting to the same performance, at least on the client side?
Yeah, they're definitely getting much better, and I think it's great. You know, we definitely need to address these performance issues. The cool thing that Firefox is doing is they're actually using some of the open source code that Adobe is contributed to Mozilla for what Flash Player is using for our just-in-time compiler. So that's the Tamarin project mm-hmm. with Mozilla, and so that new Firefox 3. 3.1 stuff is actually using the NanoJIT and some of the cool stuff that Adobe's actually contributed to Mozilla. So you know, it's great that we're all able to work together to really help increase the performance of all applications. Performance is today something that is a differentiator for Flex applications, but it's not the primary difference usually. It's usually for most people, for the reason why they adopt Flex, especially in enterprise, is because they don't have to deal with the cross. They get a great user experience, and they don't have to deal with the cross browser issues in order to get that. So that's, you know, performance will get better in the browser. The browser may even at some point have vectors and video and those sorts of mm-hmm. things that Flash has. And Flash will just keep innovating as well. So like Flash 10 is going to be coming out soon, and that's going to have, we're not calling it 3D, but we're calling it like 2.5D. So some easy ways to do 3D like transformations of objects. It'll have, support for right to left text, which is something that's not currently in there, so that'll be good. It'll have a number of other great features for building rich inner applications. So
I guess a selfish question. I mean, what was Adobe's benefit from donating that Tamarin code? I mean, what does Adobe benefit from making Firefox, you know, as fast or you know, getting close to the speed performance of Flex?
I think we benefit a lot. I think that with Mozilla's contribution to Tamarin, we've been able to improve Tamarin quite a bit. If you look at the Java virtual machine and Hotspot, you know, it's been under development for I think over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And so it's very mature, very optimized, very fast. And Tamarin has only been around for a couple of years. And so by getting some of the really, really bright people at Mozilla also helping us improve that virtual machine, you know, eventually it'll get to the point where it's hopefully as fast as Java Hotspot's virtual machine, and just continue to evolve more rapidly. So we definitely wanted to be able to innovate more quickly and improve our technology more quickly, and open source was a great way to do that. Tamarin is an implementation of what used to be the ECMAScript 4 revision 4 standard, or an early implementation of that standard. And so we were working with Mozilla to create an implementation of ECMAScript revision 4. Recently, the ECMA committee has decided to kind of hold off on implementing and talking about that specification, and now they're focusing their efforts on ECMAScript 3.1. But we still hope that we'll be able to work with Mozilla and have Tamarin be the virtual machine, or at least pieces of Tamarin, like we've seen happen or will be happening with Firefox 3.1. See pieces of that virtual machine being used to run the ECMAScript 3.1 and eventually ECMAScript 4 code. So I think that there's a lot of great things that come out of working with Mozilla on that, for sure.
Cool.
Excellent. So I guess the other thing is, you know, all these different Ajax solutions, again, they're basically a big bunch of browser hacks, right?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, Ajax got big because of XML HTTP request, which is something that Microsoft decided to add to IE in order to support like Outlook Web Access, and at some point Mozilla decided to add it as well, and so this is all kind of built on, you know, this interesting history of Microsoft adding innovative things to their browser outside of standards. So in some ways, yeah, it's a hack, but you know, it's there, and the methods for doing this have improved, and the libraries have tried to hide a lot of the complexities to Ajax, but still, you know, people find that in real applications they have to go outside of the boundaries of what these frameworks are providing them, and that's when things get murky, and that's when they spend a lot of time dealing with the cross-browser compatibility issues. And it's not always just Ajax that's not compatible cross-browser. Things like CSS and just layout and those sorts of things in HTML can differ between browsers. So so I heard one company tell me that they estimated that 30% of their development time in their Ajax applications were being spent just on doing the cross-browser compatibility testing and development. And a lot of organizations aren't willing to invest that time. They don't want to deal with that. So that's what a lot of companies and enterprises are considering Flex for, is just the having the consistency across the different browsers and operating systems.
Right, and the reason I mentioned that was because you're kind of looking at a movement now in the industry. You know, Microsoft with Silverlight, Sun with Java FX, to more kind of client server inside the browser, right? Where do you see them positioning themselves, and, you know, are they a threat to Flex from your perspective? Is it a rising tide floats all boats, and this is just like having different, you know, back to when the web became popular, it was, you know, .NET and Java and a few other things. Now we're looking at a couple different RIA platforms that are true client server, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting that the pendulum is shifting back to client client server architectures. The rich internet application model is a lot like client server, where now I've got this stateful client. It has a lot of logic in it on the client, and then makes calls back to the server to get data and make changes to data. So yeah, in a lot of ways, where the industry is headed back there. The good thing is that this time around, we're not dealing with a lot of the problems we had with client server before, so we're not having to deal with, you know, the operating system compatibility issues, which in old client server days, there you just didn't deal with it at all. Your applications ran on one specific version of Windows, and that was it, you know. And so I think that by using the browser technologies as a foundation and using Flash Player, which is ubiquitous as a foundation, we don't have to deal with the same issues we had with client server architectures. So it really gives us the ability to build much better applications. I mean, the HTML rendering, using HTML to render applications was kind of like green screens, you know, where we just basically fed something to a dumb display and it rendered it. And so by going back to client server architectures, we have a lot more capability in what we can do with the user interface and how we can interact with the backend data. So there's a lot of really good reasons to go to the client server architectures, and especially for enterprise business applications. This is where we've wanted to be. We just had to go to the browser for a while because we wanted things to work cross-platform and across browsers. But now we're there with client server architectures.
So then talk to me a bit about Air. It seems like Air would be your desktop version of running a Flex application, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like Flash Player is the runtime in the browser, Air is the runtime on the desktop. So this allows you to build applications which can do things outside of the browser sandbox. They can read and write files to the file system. They can do native drag and drop. between other applications. They have a local SQLite database, so they can save data locally. They can know when they're offline or when they're offline online. So there's lots of capabilities in these applications that you just don't get in the browser. And Java has the signing model, where if you sign an applet, then it gets outside the browser sandbox. Flash Player doesn't have that model. There is no way to sign a Flex application in the browser and give it more privileges. In order to run a Flex application with more privileges, you have to turn it into an AIR application. The good thing is that you're using the same development tools, you're reusing the same libraries, so there's very little code change usually between your web version of your rich AIR application and your desktop version of your rich AIR application.
Do you ever run into, it used to be that Flash was kind of this hard thing that no corporate IT group wanted to install on their machines, and I mean, it is definitely seeing much more penetration now, but how often do you run into, corporate IT departments that, refuse to put Flash on, their standard desktop images, and because of that, their development teams can't develop with Flex?
Yeah, it does happen occasionally. We've done studies to see what our penetration of Flash Player is in corporate environments, and it's the statistics that we're finding are that it models really what we're seeing in the consumer space, which is about 98% of end users have Flash Player installed, Flash Player 9 installed, and so we're seeing the same statistics inside corporate environments. There definitely are places where this isn't true. I talked to somebody who works a lot with lawyers, and they said that for some reason, lawyers, even though a lot of them still had Flash Player, it was Flash Player 8 or Flash Player 7. So for some reason, they weren't upgrading like other people were. So there certainly could be pockets of places where you'll find abnormalities, but across the board, it's usually you can be usually pretty sure that Flash Player 9 is going to be there, so you can run your Flex applications. Interesting thing is, a lot of times when I go into companies where they're like, oh, we don't allow Flash Player here, I say pull up YouTube.com, and they pull up YouTube.com, and guess what, it works. I'm like, oh, you have Flash Player installed. And then I say, right click, go to About Flash Player. They pull up the Flash Player About page, and it says version 9.0.0.24 or something like that. And I say, oh, and you even have a version of Flash Player that's known to have security vulnerabilities. So your IT team is actually doing you a disservice by not distributing Flash Player, the latest version of Flash Player to you. So it's an interesting kind of thing to see. Usually people have it even if they think that they don't. And if that's the case, then they might even have a vulnerable version of it. So we definitely encourage IT organizations to get involved and push out the latest versions, because we do find security problems in Flash Player, and we do fix them. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely run into at least one situation with one of our clients where they they knew that at least a percentage of their customers were not going to be able to have Flash, or at least that's what they thought, and ended up developing two versions of the product, which was unfortunate. But to get back to Ken's question, I mean, what do you see, the landscape as far as Silverlight and JavaFX? I mean, you talk about, I kind of laugh because you talk about Tamarind as only being under development for 4 or 5 years, but by the time JavaFX actually gets out the door, it might have been in development as long as the Java VM.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you see them as competitors? Is Silverlight something you think that only, .NET shops will use? Do you see Flex adoption within .NET shops?
We're definitely seeing Flex adoption within .NET shops. So you can easily expose .NET as AMF for web services, and then connect your Flex application to your .NET backend. So we're definitely seeing that happen. As far as Silverlight goes, Silverlight and JavaFX are a little bit late to the game. It's clear that Flex, has the advantage of just being the first major RA platform. to get a lot of adoption. Silverlight has focused mostly on video so far and has not focused a whole lot on the actual rich internet application space and complex data grids and charting controls and great component model and component ecosystem and those sorts of things that are very strong in Flex. JavaFX has just come out with their first preview release, so it's kind of yet to be determined, where they're going to fit and play in all this. Reviews I've seen of JavaFX so far say, hey, this looks a lot like Flex, and that's kind of a compliment for us. So I think, we'll kind of have to wait and see whether or not JavaFX and Silverlight can really break into the enterprise application space. And so far, I have not seen them at all there. When I go meet with customers, they're evaluating Flex, and that's about it. So they don't consider Silverlight or JavaFX usually to be options for them to build their corporate IT applications, their business applications, enterprise applications on yet. They see Flex as being a mature product for that and a pretty easy choice.
Sounds like it was good to go first this time, huh?
That's right. Yeah, usually the first mover has problems, but I think that we got lucky and got in there right at the right time.
So what's on deck for Flex coming up?
So the next version of Flex has a number of big things that are going to change. They're working on a new component model called Gumbo. A lot of the information for that is on the opensource.adobe.com site. And so Gumbo is going to be a new component model. If the existing Flex component model is built on a foundation that is like 5 or 6 years old, and so we've taken ActionScript code and we've ported it from initially from FlashMX 2004 to Flex 1 to Flex 1.5 to Flex 2 to Flex 3 and added new things and revised things, but really the foundation that it was built on was not the best foundation, and so we're reworking some of the component model. The old component model isn't going to go away. It's just most of the future development will be using the Gumbo components. So that's going to be great. It's actually the core of Gumbo is to split out the MVC pieces within the actual component model, and it will allow for much more significant reuse of components. So some really great things in Gumbo, the Gumbo component set. Flex Builder 4 is going to have a number of enhancements and improvements. We just released a new version of Flex Builder 3.01, which now supports Eclipse 3.4. So we'll continue to build on the Eclipse platform and continue to enhance what Flex Builder can do and how it can help you easily connect to your back-end data. So lots of great things coming in Flex 4. A lot of the stuff is up on the open source site for what our plans are and where things are going. So those are the exciting things for sure.
And you can see most of those developments if you actually check out the Flex SDK, right? I mean, yeah. You could Flash Player 10 is in there, and at least some of the starting work for the SDK 4 is in there, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So there's been daily builds. There's daily builds going on. You can get the code from SVN and build it yourself. But yeah, it's the open source SDK. You can watch. You can subscribe to the change list email list and see exactly what's going on, what's happening. We've already integrated Flash Player 10 stuff in. So there's definitely lots of exciting stuff going on in the open source project. And then at some point we'll declare one of those builds the Flex 4 build, but that's a ways out right now.
Now, also just for people who are interested in Flex and want to see how it works in terms of end user experience, the killer apps out there that are written in Flex, is my understanding correct that Adobe Photoshop Online is all Flex based?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Photoshop Express is built with Flex, as is Acrobat.com, the new hosted services for Acrobat. So Adobe's doing a lot to build Flex applications today, and it's become Flex has become a major part of the applications we're building. So Adobe has some great examples of what you can do with Flex on our site. The next version of Connect is built with Flex, and quite quite a few others. So those are some great ones to check out. There's a huge list of publicly accessible Flex applications at flex.org/showcase. So the showcase is just all the publicly accessible Flex applications that we know of out there. But there's thousands of Flex applications that are behind the firewall and require logins that we can't even list there. So it will give you a good overview of what's kind of in the consumer space, but won't really show you what's happening in the enterprise space. So there's also some great air applications coming out now. eBay has a great one. You can find a lot of those by going to the Air Marketplace. Best way to find it is just search Google for Air Marketplace, and you can download and install a ton of different air applications. A lot of them are built with Flex, like the eBay desktop and number of other the major Flex application or air applications are built with Flex. So yeah, so there's really a ton out there for people to go see and be amazed at what people are building.
So let me plug your DZone Rev card. Anybody who's getting started with Flex, it looked like a really nice overview of just kind of how to get started.
Yeah, the very first steps in Flex is what we called that one. So Actually it takes a couple chapters from Bruce and I's book called First Steps in Flex, and we created a DZone ref card called Very First Steps in Flex. So you can find that on my blog. There's a link to it there or on the DZone site. So yeah, so that's a great way to start. Also on my blog, specifically for Java developers, there's a video you can watch about how to integrate Flex in Java. It's a total introductory video. And then there's also a list of some articles that are out there about integrating Flex in Java. There's one on InfoQ that is an intro to BlazeDS, which is the open source way to connect up to your Java backend. So that's a really good one to get started if you want to start playing around. The article is a walkthrough of how to install BlazeDS, how to create a project using it, and those sorts of things. So that's a good place to start too.
Excellent. And when's that book coming out?
Hopefully in the next few months. We're just wrapping up some legal stuff. So hopefully once that's done, we'll get it published.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much, James, for taking the time with us today. I think it was a great show.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Special thanks today to James Ward for coming on the show. You can find a lot of information about all of our past shows, as well as show notes, presentations, and more by visiting our website at www.chariotsolutions.com. Click on the Downloads tab to find out information about podcasts and other presentations. I'd also like to remind you to take a look at our upcoming conference, Fall Forecast, Computing Among the Clouds. It's going to be held on October 17th, a Friday, at the Penn State Great Valley campus. You can find out more information about this conference at www.cloudconeast.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimble.